Sports without Jim, so better. Nardi Sportscast.
Listening to the Nordies podcast. I'm Eric. I'm here with Ryan and Ryan only. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah. It's going to be a more streamlined conversation. Jim, I think he was at a sprained ankle playing pickup basketball at a church league.
Yeah, he's day to day right now. He's not on IR yet. He's having an MRI on Tuesday. So yeah. We'll know a little bit more. It could be a high ankle sprain, so he could be out 4 to 6 weeks. Knowing Jim, probably just a tiny little bruise that he is going to overreact to just a little bit. So
I think it was the combination of just getting over his chronic back injury, the piles of laundry he had to get through, and church league basketball, ankle injury. He can't be here today.
No, that's okay. We'll carry on as we have done, was it like 15 times now without him? I mean, we keep this going. We're going to get to triple digits without him pretty soon. But that's okay. That's okay. I know. Listen, we miss him for the screencast a lot. Like we need his input. He knows a lot. Sportscast, his Wolves knowledge is so invaluable that we definitely miss that too. So we got to get him we got to get some new trainers for him. You know how like Shaq was kind of banged up, kind of bounced around. Then he went to Phoenix and got in their like physical therapy program. And it was all of a sudden like a new man.
Like no sugar.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
We got the Steve Nash diet. Yeah.
You could do the Kyrie Irving, go vegan. That's his new
flat
thing.
Earth vegan.
Yeah. Flat Earth vegan.
I mean,
yeah.
you can't go Kyrie Irving diet without being a flat earther. So that's part of it.
And speaking of that, have you heard about this guy who's going to launch himself out of a homemade rocket ship?
I thought that
ship?
Was yesterday. He was supposed
did he
to do
it?
I don't know.
Gosh, I hope he did.
I hope he did. And I hope that, listen, Darwinism is in full force, okay?
I don't wish anything too terrible upon anybody, but I mean, I guess the only thing that would be funnier is if he flew off the edge of the earth.
It was like, see, I told you so.
Yeah. That's the only way it could be any funnier, if he was actually right and he just like fell off the edge into the abyss. But yeah, I mean, I don't understand it. Like, I don't really know where we're headed as a world, where like we have more information than ever. We have like, we can like tap into satellites and see the world. But for some reason, more people than ever are like, nope, fake.
Flat. Earth's flat.
Earth's always been flat.
Didn't sun
Columbus
sets,
tell us that?
The sun sets everywhere at the same time for everybody.
Yeah.
The lunar eclipse, you know, you see just a little like horizontal line across the middle of the moon with Earth's shadow. It's not a big round circle that's shadowing the moon. Yeah. It's a flat line across the middle of the moon's surface.
I'd ask, I'm sure they have some bullshit answer too, but like, where does the water go when it goes off the edge of the Earth?
It pools into the middle, Eric. Haven't you read the theories on this?
It pools in the middle?
Oh, come on.
From the edges?
You got to be better than this.
Is it like an infinity pool?
It finds the lowest spot, Eric, which is why there's like things like the Mariana Trench and things like that.
Wow. I've never read any of this.
No. I don't, because you'll literally read like two paragraphs and think, what am I doing with my life? Why am I reading this drivel? Flat earthers have a voice now.
They shouldn't.
I know. We have access to more information than we could ever possibly need, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah, it really is.
Is that there's too much information, bullshit, and not bullshit.
So the only information you should really trust is Real News, Nordy's podcast, and all the great news that we're giving you guys. So definitely follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Nordy's podcast. Also, subscribe on iTunes and on Podbean. Make sure you get the Nordy's podcast every single week. And you know what? Since you're so thankful for us, it just was Thanksgiving. Maybe throw it out there on your Twitter that you're a Nordy's podcaster and your friends should join you and give us a listen. Otherwise, just ask us questions. Tell us how stupid we are. Tell us what you agree with and don't. Tell us what you want to hear about on the show. We love to interact with you guys. And I've been meeting and running into a bunch of listeners that I didn't know before, or meeting people who listen to the show, and it's always exciting to hear from you guys. So keep it up, keep hitting us up, and keep spreading the word about the Northeast Podcast. All right, so we have a new beer in front of us, something pretty exciting. What are we drinking?
Well, for the screencast, we went to Toppling Goliath. We're still there. We're still in Decorah, Iowa. This is a very uniquely named beer. This is called Fire, Skulls, and Money from Toppling Goliath. This is, they call it an American IPA. I feel like they're going for the hazy, unfiltered sort of trend that a lot of breweries are going with, and I think this is their version of it. Another, you know, I'm reading this from Beer Advocate. It doesn't have a really in-depth description of it. It's just sort of a one-off. The ratings are really high, an average of almost 4.4, which there's a lot of beer snobs on Beer Advocate. For it to be up that high, I think is a pretty good mark. But people love Toppling Goliath as well. They feel like it's like this kind of niche craft brewery. But they do make a lot of really good beer. You know, Pseudo Sue is a really good one. The Pompeii that we just had yesterday. So Fire, Skulls, and Money, sort of a hazy, juicy, fruity, grapefruit IPA. I think it's really good. I definitely think it's better than Pompeii.
See, the last one I thought was so fruity. And this one, I think when I think of all of these like New England style or East Coast IPAs that we have been focusing on so much the last couple months, I do agree that this is their shot at that. This is what they were going for, but it didn't come across very juicy to me. So I think that's why they kind of changed the language a little bit. It is really good though. It is a really nice beer. But yeah, I don't think it's as fruity or juicy as the last one we had.
It's so interesting because I didn't get fruit hardly at all from the Pompeii. And this one I get like major grapefruit, major orange, major apricot, like those sort of, that sort of fruit profile. Definitely not on the sweeter side, more on the citrusy side.
Yeah, no, I get I guess I do have some of the citrus side coming through, but yeah, I don't know. I always think of like when they say the word juicy about beer, I always think about like they splashed orange juice in there. And I know that that's not really what it is.
But, no, but I know what you're saying.
But yeah. It, in my mind, like that's just kind of like how it seems to me. Like they splashed a little orange juice in there and that's why it tastes like refreshing and juicy. And I don't get that with this one as much. So
this tastes like Five Alive with alcohol in it to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's weird.
I have a cold.
True, but it's just, that's also the unique aspect of why we try so many different beers on this podcast, because everyone gets different sensations, different tastes, different smells from these beers. And it's cool to see that we literally had opposite takes on two different beers. I got malt from the last one.
And we both liked them.
And we both liked them, and for different reasons. And that's cool.
Have you ever been to like a snobby coffee shop?
Like what?
I love Annalise here in Northeast.
Like Dunn Brothers?
I love Spy House.
No, I've had coffee from boutique coffee shops, if you want to call them that. I don't know what you mean by snobby though.
Like they always have like those things where it's like it will describe the Ethiopian and it'll be like plum, gummy, wine, chocolate. I made the mistake one time. They only had one cold brew. And I remember it said like gummy, wine.
What does gummy mean?
Like a gummy bear, I think. It was like gummy, candy, like wine, chocolate. And then I was like, I think I'll have the chocolate one. And they were like so offended. They were like, no, those are the notes.
It's all one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Like, okay, Kevin, why don't you get me that cup of coffee, please?
Okay, guy wearing like ironic band shirt here at this place. I get it. I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah.
I'll have one.
Well, and I guess like it's not like wine in the sense, like wine, you can definitely get different flavors from a lot. I really feel like coffee is just kind of limited to tasting like coffee. I've watched more YouTube videos watching people try expensive coffee versus drip coffee. And not every time, but a decent chunk of time, the coffee snob person who's like, I kind of know a lot about coffee, picked the fucking drip coffee as their favorite. And it was from like a Mr. Coffee machine. And they're like, yeah, this one's just dark and chocolate and it's delicious. And it's like fucking Folgers. And they loved it. So that's why I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't really care either. I do like, though, if you go to those places like Annalais, I really love it. It's wonderful. It's a great place to go. Good coffee, good prices, fun area. But I went there and I was like, do you guys have cold brew? And they were like, no, we have this ancient Japanese method where the coffee like sits in this thing and it like wants to be colder than it is. And like,
and you're like, is it cold?
Yeah. I was like, I'll just do that.
I'll take the cold coffee. I'll take
the ancient Japanese method of doing the same thing. All right. So, time to jump into our sports cast. Sorry, we went way off the rails.
Nordeast Coffee Cast. Let's do it.
Yeah. Nordeast Coffee Cast for sure. We'll get there. The starting lineup, we have to start with Gopher Sports. Some ups, some downs. Going to some weird places yesterday.
Very weird.
So we had...
Well, we went to some familiar places.
Yeah. So we had the Gopher football team losing the Axe for, what, the 14th straight year? Straight year?
The winning streak is in high school at this point. So
the winning streak is when I was in ninth grade was the last time, and I believe now we've lost to Wisconsin 21 of the last 23 times in football. And that is astonishing to me because I understand that, you know, Madison is a great and proud university. It's well run. But they just cut $125 million from their budget. And they are like a premium school and football and basketball program. And I just don't understand how the U of M, in a bigger, better funded state with more population and easier to get into and, you know, in a bigger city and every reason possible that we would be better than them, we can't compete with the Wisconsins. We can't compete with the Iowas. And it is embarrassing.
I can give you one word why that doesn't exist here. Culture. And Iowa has had Hayden Fry to Kirk Ferentz. So that's like 60 years of two coaches. I'm exaggerating. And then you have Barry Alvarez, who went from head coach for God knows how many years to AD, brought in his guy to replace him. And it's been the same. It's basically the same program coached by a different person. They're pretty good at recruiting in state. They keep most of their top flight guys in state. We've had, since Glenn Mason, how many coaches have we had? How many head coaches? Like five?
We had Glenn Mason. We had
Brewster.
Brewster.
Nightmare.
We had, did it go right to Kill at that point?
Did it go to Kill?
I think it went to Kill, then Clays, then now Fleck. I mean, that's just too many.
Okay, so four in like 15 years, roughly.
Yeah.
Which is absurd.
It's absurd, yeah.
You're never going to, Tim Brewster killed the program, essentially. After Mason had a pretty good foundation going and had a pretty good winning attitude. They weren't ever great, but they had, you know, the Penn State upsets. They beat Wisconsin. I mean, they had the collapses.
They were consistently a top 25 team, though.
And could be. And were consistently top five in the Big Ten. And if they weren't, they still gave a hell of a game every time. They weren't just pushovers. Yeah. We weren't Indiana football. Then we turned into Indiana football, which we were just, you know, pushovers, basically. Kill got us back on the right track. Obviously, things didn't pan out, you know, for his health reasons and not being able to recruit a quarterback, which is, you know, a number one problem. So that brings us to PJ Fleck. I am on the side of giving him the benefit of the doubt. He was left. I'm not going to say the program was in shambles, but it definitely wasn't where his vision is. And I hope we talked about this from the beginning. Like, he's big on the details. He's big on all these small things. He's big on the culture and attitude and work ethic and effort and doing all the little things. I'm not saying the other coaches weren't, but I think his attitude's more in the forefront. I don't think he's a snake oil salesman. I think it sounds like that because he's a little bit more verbose and kind of wants to be in front of the camera more than a lot of coaches do. But I think we got to give him the chance to build a program. I mean, you could have said the same thing about Richard Pitino a couple years ago. Things pretty much hit rock bottom. We were one of the worst teams in Big Ten basketball, and now look where we are. We'll get into them here in a few minutes. But I think we got to give him time to recruit a quarterback. We got to give him time to recruit the players that he wants. It takes time. It takes time to build a program, a new culture. I know everyone thinks that this is going to be, you know, the stepping stone to LSU or you know, Georgia or what have you
that'd be great.
For PJ Fleck. But build the program to the point where he's good enough to get to those and leave it in a good spot. So
I think that there's only two options. I mean, it's either a stepping stone to LSU or it's a stepping stone to Wyoming or like Midwest, Northeastern.
Yeah, North Texas. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, like, I would way rather have the guy who leaves us to go to the big time school than the guy that we get rid of and his career is never the same.
I agree.
And so I think that should be the least of our worries. But yeah, my big thing is like, we as Minnesotans, we're like so ready for things to go poorly. We're so ready for coaches to leave and players to leave that we don't even enjoy them while they're here. And we're so ready to fail that we want to get rid of people before we even give them a chance to settle in and to build what they are telling us they want to.
Well, I would say that the sports writing, sports media coverage here is so ready to say, I knew it.
Yeah.
They're not as good as I thought they were. Like, and like just ready to be like, yep, see, another long list of failures. We're going to add you to it kind of deal. And I hate that.
And it's like, to me, and we should spend a long segment on this sometime, but I'm always so offended when these like sports websites or journalists or magazines or newspapers do their most tortured sports fans. And they put like all these like rinky dink little cities, like San Diego is the biggest, the most tortured sports fans. I'm like, what? I'm like, they live in California. They literally have two professional teams. They're fine. Right?
It's 72 degrees year round.
People are like, oh, Cleveland, the most tortured fans. I'm like, they literally have Ohio State.
Yeah.
Like, it might not be their first choice, but they have something that's going well for them, right? They win titles in some way. Another one is Buffalo. I'm like, Buffalo? Like, Buffalo. They have a sports team, and we're going to act like they're two. So... Who's the other one?
The Sabres.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. They won a Stanley Cup, so... I don't know. To me, I always think it's crazy that the Twin Cities and Minnesota in general isn't thought of as like the place where sports go wrong, where what can go wrong will. And
well, the two baseball World Series titles kind of, I mean, so when you're factoring in, like, if you're going to look at like the last 30 years, technically we have two World Series in that time.
Yeah.
But for every other sport that we have nothing.
And we have nothing ever.
Right.
We have nothing ever in basketball. I mean, you can say the Lakers, but they're not here anymore.
That doesn't really count.
We have nothing ever in hockey, and we're supposedly the state of hockey. We have nothing ever in college sports since, like, my grandpa was, like, a kid.
1953 was the last Gophers.
We have nothing in the NFL, and we have a couple titles in Major League Baseball that are closing in on 30 years. So, to me, I mean, it's, like, it's a pretty tough place. And so the fans have had so much heartbreak that we hate to buy in and we hate to have hope and we hate to get excited. And I even found myself, like, I'm 29 years old and I find myself already thinking like, who's going to knock off the Vikings in the playoffs or what injury is going to derail our season? And I shouldn't be thinking like that. I should be like, hey, how often is it that my team is 9-2? Like, I should enjoy every second of the ride. But I fall into that like negative Minnesotan thing as well sometimes, where I'm just expecting the worst. And it's such a bad place to be. And so I have to say, I try not to be too reactionary when it comes to sports, but I definitely was when it came to Richard Pitino and wanting him to leave and thinking he was the wrong hire and that he only got hired because of his name. And, you know, now he looks like he's one of the hot young coaching prospects in the country.
And I think that's actually one of the best things to happen to PJ Fleck.
Oh, for sure.
In that, well, I think Mark Coyle AD has a better vision than people really understand. Yeah. And I think he didn't bring in PJ Fleck to just be this 3-year deal. And that's why they just extended him. Also to make it a little more difficult for him to leave, which makes sense. And I think everyone needs to exercise some patience. And it's the same thing you do with a rookie quarterback. It's the same thing you do with a rookie head coach in any level. You can't just say, oh, this new guy's here, immediate results are going to happen. And I know that's just sort of the culture that we're living in, which is immediate expectations, immediate gratification. And if you look at some of the major programs in the Big Ten, in the SEC, my favorite example is Dabo Swinney. And you look at what he's done with Clemson, that they had decent players, but were never really in the conversation for national championship. Is Clemson in the ACC?
Yeah, they're in the ACC. So ACC game against Miami.
They weren't even considered for like top 4 ACC teams, and ACC football wise was pretty weak.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years ago, and they were telling a story on the broadcast of their game this week, which was, you know, they're national champions, and sort of in preseason, there were guys that were showing up late to lunch and not coming. They were eating in their dorms or whatever. And he pulled the entire team aside and screamed at them for like 30 minutes of like, we did not get here for you to just sort of take all of this lightly. And I think he's a great example of what programs should aspire to be, which is finding a guy who's young, hungry, wants his guys to work as hard as he does, and give them a chance to build a program. I mean, they lost in the national championship, or was it in the Final Four the previous season, and then came back to win it the next season. I mean, talk about not suffering from the previous year's success hangover. You know, that's very difficult to repeat. So I hope PJ Fleck falls into that category of, number one, everyone's giving him a chance to actually build something, and number two, everyone having a little bit more patience than we've had with Gopher coaches in the past, other than Don Lucia, who has absolutely failed as a coach, but somehow continues to have a job. So
he's for sure got some kind of blackmail, like the president of
for
the
sure. So anyway, I think I like Fleck. It is a little bit annoying at times with the superlatives and the continued like, but that's also the same thing you have to have as a head coach, which is keep repeating the mantra and keep believing, and hopefully the players do moving forward.
Yeah, I just think it's too early to jump off the ship. And I think,
and the beginning of the season was way too early to jump on the ship.
Yeah, it is. And it's like, you can be excited, but you have to understand that, like, I've heard so many people say, this was not a horrible team. This is a team who won quite a few games last year. They didn't lose that many guys. Like, we shouldn't have taken this step backwards. But you have to understand, he didn't have the same schemes as the guys who were there before. So in the NFL, they would get rid of guys. They'd bring in free agents that match the scheme. They'd draft guys that matched what they wanted to do. And they'd make that team look a little bit more like the team they wanted. Not so easy to do in college, especially when the recruiting season is pretty much over when you get hired. And so he has to take, you know, maybe he wants guards who pull, and the previous guys wanted big run grading guards, you know. Maybe he wants a one cut back, and they had like pass catching backs, or maybe he wanted, you know, whatever it is. It's like they were building the team in their image before, and now he's trying to rebuild it in his image, and what he wants from specific positions and players is going to look different. And so some guys aren't going to look as good in his scheme as they did in a previous scheme that was built around them and their skill set. And so I think it's just like, have a little patience. Understand that it doesn't mean he's for sure going to be a success, but he can't be a success if we don't give him time to get there.
Agreed.
And it's like, we're too big of a school and too big of a conference to always be bad. And I think there's like enough people care enough that they're going to at least be a respectable team in the next couple of years.
Yeah. And I absolutely agree. Be patient. And it might get worse. It might get worse, or it might stay the same.
I think it might stay the same. I think this is about as bad as we can be.
Maybe, but you never know.
This is pretty bad.
Until we can recruit a quarterback, we're never going to really compete in the Big Ten.
I that is one thing I am a little confused about, and obviously it's not as easy as it is in my head. In my mind, it's like, I'd just go to every four-star quarterback in the country and say, do you want to start for a Big Ten team for four straight years? And in my mind, someone would be like, yeah, I'm a competitor. I'd love to. But it's like what you don't understand is like the four, five-star quarterbacks going to Alabama. You know, like guys who are just competing with other incredible players for the same jobs.
Well, and they're going to like USC.
Yeah.
Alabama, Georgia, and probably another SEC team. And then there's a handful of other guys that are going to go to Florida State, Florida.
Ohio they're going to go, State,
yeah, Ohio Michigan. State. Yeah. And well,
we're way
Michigan.
Down. We're way down. I don't know. We're way down the,
no,
the list.
No. And if we do have a good quarterback, he's probably not going to stay in state.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
It is.
But I think PJ Fleck can actually change that and maybe keep a guy who's like on the fence between, let's just say, Michigan and Minnesota, or, you know, I'm not going to say he's going to be a starter for Ohio State, but maybe he, you know, is going to be a redshirt freshman at Ohio State versus starting in Minnesota. Maybe Fleck can get that guy to tip the scale just a little bit and stay in.
I know, like we've said this so many times in basketball, but I am really hoping that we get Quinn Carroll, if you know who he is. He's a like big-time tackle recruit from Edina. He's going to be a senior next year. He's wanted currently by like Minnesota, Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame, everybody. And so
right now for football, I don't know why you would ever want to come to Minnesota. If you can go be a starting lineman at Alabama, you're probably going to go to the NFL.
But it's like if you could get some of these kids to stay, that's how you turn it around. And I know we don't have the tradition or even the prestige of a school like Stanford, but I think a great example is Andrew Luck and Toby Gerhart going to Stanford as big recruits and turning Stanford's program around from a dumpster team to a, you know, BCS bowl team. And it's like that's the kind of thing that needs to happen to turn a program around. And it might be lucky. It might be a three-star recruit who turns into an NFL first-round player. But it's like you've got to find a few of those guys or your program will just kind of run in place forever.
Yep.
All right, so let's talk a little Gopher basketball. A lot of hope there. Undefeated, currently ranked 14th, probably going to move up closer to that 10 spot.
They're probably going to stick right around where they are. They haven't really, I mean, yeah, Alabama was 25th, but haven't really beat anybody of note.
No, but also today. haven't slipped up at all. Played Alabama. We're playing really well. We're up double digits pretty much the whole game.
And then chaos ensues.
All hell breaks loose.
All hell breaks loose. This was like the Knicks against the Heat in like the 96, you know, semifinals in the NBA where there's like almost a bench-clearing brawl. Guys step on the court. Almost the entire Alabama team is ejected.
Every bench player from Alabama was ejected.
Because they all ran on the court.
Yeah. And was it Nate Mason? Is that his name?
Yeah.
Nate Mason, he was ejected.
Yep.
Patino was teed up. Games, they're losing the game. They eject an entire bench of players, which I've never seen in any sport at any level. Then very shortly after, another player gets his fifth foul, fouls out of the game, and then another player sprains his ankle.
Like pretty badly too. This wasn't like oh, he just kind of tweaked it, go tape it up and get back out there. It was like legit, he was rolling around on the ground injured.
And they have to play 5-on-3 for the rest of the game. And it was the most awkward basketball of all time because they pretty much just sat in the lane and the Gophers for some reason didn't want to run their offense and also didn't want to shoot threes. So instead, they just settled for taking really ugly long twos over and over and over.
It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen because they could have had a dunk every time. And maybe they just sort of called off the dogs a little bit. But Alabama actually kind of made it a game. I mean, they were within four.
Well, they got it within three.
Oh, they got Sexton, they did get it within three?
Yeah, okay. They had the ball down three with just over a minute to go.
With three players.
Yeah.
On five.
And they had someone, Sexton, a freshman, who had 40-plus and yep. Just took the game over. They were hitting threes every time down the court.
I think it would have been more interesting if Patino would have like pulled two guys out. We could have just played 3-on-3 the rest of the game.
It was insane, though. I mean, I just have never seen something like this.
I don't
know
if it was like a respect thing. Like, we're not going to try and show you up by dunking every time. But you're trying to win a freaking basketball game. Like, and they have three players. I understand that.
Well, they just sat in front of the hoop. They pretty much played like a three-man zone around the rim.
You're right.
And just said, like, all you're going to have to do
is infamous 2-1 zone.
Yeah. And the thing is they pretty much were like, all you guys can do is shoot, like, uncontested jumpers. And it was like so awkward to see the shots they were taking. They were like stepping in from the 3-point line by like 2 dribbles and then like taking like a 16-foot jump shot. And they just kept missing them. It was so bizarre. The game gets close again. They end up winning by 5 points. A good win, but just one for the record books. I mean, one that people will talk about for a long time.
Imagine if we would have lost. What?
It would have been the most Minnesota sports thing ever.
Patino might have been fired.
Yeah, they'd have been like, come on, man. Like, honestly.
We were just talking about how great of a job he'd done building the program, and then we could have fired him after that.
He said, though, he was like, you know, it's hard to play when you can't play your offense. It's really hard. And it's like, with my just like low-level like high school coaching knowledge, it is the truth. Like, sometimes when you play the worst teams and they can't even give you a look, like a competitive look, it messes up everything you're doing because you spend all of your time preparing for them to give you a look like they're supposed to. And when they just play like idiots, sometimes they're just like waiting in the place that you're headed to. And so I think that's kind of the part of it too, is like they weren't even playing defense. And so the Gophers just looked lost when they had the ball out there. It was really awkward and pretty wild to watch, but it's fun. They're a good team. They're pretty deep. They're athletic. They have something I think is really cool about modern basketball, like position flexibility.
Yeah, and Jordan Murphy is going to be a superstar. Yeah. And I hope this carries over into Big Ten play because he's really good.
Yeah, they have plenty of guys, though. I mean, they're like 7 guys deep, and even with Curry out for the year, they're about 7 guys deep who are like really, really nice college basketball players. So I think, you know, I don't want to get my hopes too high, but I'm going to set them too high. I think that they should be a top 2 and top 3 at least team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I agree. That is the goal, and I really think it's like 3 or 4 seed in the tournament should be the goal. And
I want to like hover around like 10th in the country for the whole year.
The double bye going into the Big Ten tournament, win that game, you know, get to the semifinals, lose to Michigan State like we normally do, and then sneak in as a 4 seed. I think that's probably our spot, is like right in the 4 seed range right now, barring injuries or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think that should be the expectation. The Big Ten's down a bit. Traditional power like Wisconsin is way down. Indiana's down. Yeah, I mean, there's just not a lot of teams in the preseason top 25 from the Big Ten even. I think we should be able to compete with every team that we're going to see this season. I'm not saying we're going to win every game, but we should be able to go out there and compete with anyone that we run into, which is pretty exciting for Minnesota college sports.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, so it's time to move on to the main event.
Now that we spent 30 minutes on Gophers basketball.
You know, we're coming a little late with the Vikings talk, and we're gonna keep it pretty simple for you today. But our Minnesota Vikings are 9-2. I don't know what's going to happen this week when all the experts are going to have to figure out a new way to tell us that the New Orleans Saints are better than us. But we're alone in second in the NFC, tied for the second best record in the NFL, and the Eagles play against the Seattle Seahawks next week, I believe, on the road. So a tough game, and who knows, maybe by the end of next week we could have the best record in the NFL.
Well, we got a pretty easy road game.
Yeah,
going into the defending Super Bowl runner-up Atlanta Falcons. I'm not nervous either,
and I think that's I thought that was bad for most of the season, like not being nervous about all these games, but I'm starting to get to a point where I think I just expect to win almost any game, home or away. And I think like I'm not going to go as far as predicting like a Super Bowl or anything like that, but I think if we can just win some of these difficult games, we had a 5-game stretch that, you know, I think if you would have guaranteed the Vikings 2-3 or 3-2, they would have probably jumped on it. And they're 3 games in and they're 3-0. And so if they can get through these next games 1-1 or 2-0, I mean, they should be considered as one of the probably 3 to 4 favorites to win the entire league, win the Super Bowl this year at home.
Yeah, and the Detroit game was probably a little bit closer than it should have been. And you know, Detroit's a good football team.
Yeah.
Like they're not a bad team.
No, they just play to the exact level of whoever they're playing.
I mean, they could have lost to the Bears.
Could have lost to the Browns and the Bears 2 weeks in a row, and then could have beat the Vikings.
And I always throw this out there because it is a factor. And we literally had 3 days rest to travel to Detroit and, you know, play at 11 o'clock in the morning, 11:30 in the morning. I mean, it's not like the easiest thing to do. I like, if you compare it to like high school, when you played high school football, anybody that did, like you play Friday night and let's say you played a pretty tough opponent, like the Rams, like guys that good defense, hit hard, very physical, very trying game. You know, Saturday rolls around, you're sore, whatever. Sunday is kind of a, you know, day off. Monday, you kind of shake it out, and then you got to go play another game on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like that's sort of the, and that's just high school, you know? I mean, yep. It's not nearly as big and fast and whatever. And the Vikings and the Lions had to do that. And I'm not saying there's no excuse for either side. I mean, you're both playing under the same circumstances, but you watched a lot of those Detroit guys are like dropping like flies, a lot of injuries, and that's not what you want to see. As a Vikings fan, you think like, oh, well, that's good for us. We want to win. But you really don't. I mean, you don't want to see anybody go down, and that's how you win the game. Stafford gets hurt. He obviously wasn't the same player after he got rolled up on.
Yeah, but he's turning into like a top five all-time like
second half injured, of the season injured guy.
Injured, limping around the field and bringing his team back kind of player.
Yeah, no, agreed. And it did make me nervous. But then when you realize like he couldn't even plant and throw, that yeah. it didn't look good. Like you said, let's not look at all the negatives. You know, the Vikings escaped relatively unscathed from that. We got an extra couple days rest now to go to Atlanta. Going to be a tough road game.
We've played really well against Atlanta in the last couple of years.
We have, but they have a very potent offense. I mean, yeah. you saw what Julio Jones can do. I think, you know, Xavier Rhodes can hopefully be the great equalizer against him if need be. But they have a lot of weapons. And, you know, Tevin Coleman's good.
Freeman should be back. Yep. Sanu's been pretty good.
As long as Sanu's not throwing the ball, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
Based off today. But no, I think, you know, if we go 1-1 against Atlanta and Carolina, we don't really have a reputable opponent the remainder of the season, barring the fact that Aaron Rodgers might come back.
Yeah.
In week 16, I think is when we play them. But either way, if we win one more game, two more games, I would probably feel pretty comfortable winning the North. But we beat three opponents that probably the national media felt were coin toss games, if not that we were underdogs against the Rams, against the Skins, and the then Lions. The Lions. What were they? Were they?
We were favored.
We were favored
on the road, but
barely. Know, it was like 3.5.
It's the first time we're starting to get some of that respect, though.
But that's I don't want it. Like, let's don't give us like a 5-point favorite going into Atlanta. I don't want to see that. I want to see Atlanta by 3. You know, I want to see us be the continual underdog where everyone's sort of like, well, you know, it's Case Keenum. You know, he's not that good, which I think finally we can finally put to bed the Keenum versus Bridgewater argument for the remainder season. Of the season.
Yeah.
I don't think that needs to be a discussion point. I don't think we need to see anybody else other than Case Keenum. And I want Zimmer to just keep saying, I don't know who's going to start, and have the media go bonkers over it, and Keenum still has a fire lit under his ass and playing. Because realistically, he's here for the season, but he's also playing for starter money next season somewhere else.
Some company, I don't know who it was, but they came out today with their projection on the Vikings quarterbacks and what they'll sign for in the offseason. Did you see this?
I didn't.
They said their guess right now is that Keenum will sign a 3-year deal for between $15 and $16 million per season right now, which is pretty good money. Wouldn't put him in the top 10 by any means
no.
of quarterbacks, but good starter money. Their guess for Bridgewater is a fully guaranteed 1-year, like $7 million deal. They compared it to RG3 and Bradford. They said, you know, he's probably just
can he even walk 1 year
guy at this point.
Yeah. Bradford's made plenty of money. I'm not too concerned about him financially. Keenum, if he plays the way he has the rest of the season, the Vikings would be fools not to re-sign him in some capacity. I'm not saying for the money that you're saying, or maybe a 2-year deal, 10, 12 million. I'd be fine with that. But I think the Vikings would be silly not to re-sign him with the success that he's had so far.
Yeah. Here's one thing, though, that no one has been talking about, that after this weekend, there was a little chatter, a little speculation. Everyone's talking about, is it Bradford? Is it Bridgewater? Is it Keenum next year? Is it one of them? Do they sign multiple of those guys? I'm thinking that there might be a different answer, as our guy Rick Spielman spent the day yesterday on Saturday. Spent the day up close and personal with Heisman favorite Baker Mayfield and the Oklahoma Sooners. And I do think that this might actually end up being a place where one of those late first round quarterbacks could be a guy coming to Minnesota with the infrastructure already in place where they could come in, they could learn for, you know, they could have a guy like Teddy who is making a lot less money there for a year or two, and then they could step in year two or three and be the guy moving forward. And I think that's something to actually look for. They're going to have a lot of decisions to make with finances here. They're going to have Diggs' decision, Barr decision, Danielle Hunter. Eventually you'll have Kendricks and Trey Waynes and guys like that. And they're going to have to make some choices on guys they keep and guys they let go. And the more money you spend on your quarterback, you probably lose one of those guys every single time. So
that's I think that's why Keenum is so appealing for our situation. And I'm not saying the defense is always going to be top five, because you're going to have bumps in the road. You're going to have seasons where it just things just don't work out. The ball doesn't bounce your way, a couple injuries here and there, and then all of a sudden you're like, you know, 17th in the league.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you have this weird, you know, you have the Staffords and the Matt Ryans and Aaron Rodgers and whatever that are making $20 million a season, and they're taking up a huge chunk of your cap. And then you have a guy like Case Keenum who is pretty serviceable. He's not going to throw for 350 yards a game and three touchdowns, but he does exactly what you need him to do and allows you to be successful offensively without breaking the budget. And that could be Teddy. That could be Keenum. That could be another rookie QB. But eventually, you know, you do want to find a franchise QB. Mm-hmm. Is Teddy that? Maybe. Is Keenum that? Probably not. I mean, we know what Case is, but he's doing a great job this season. Yeah. I think they would be silly not to re-sign him.
I think that they're going to go with Teddy. And I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's... But I just think that when they're going to look at it, if, you know, say that these numbers are a little inflated and Keenum's, you know, looking for 3 years, $40 million.
I mean, Keenum is Brock Osweiler, essentially, on a better offensive team.
Yeah. So to say he's looking for 3 years, $40 million, and Teddy's looking for 1 year, $7 million, I kind of think they're just going to say they're pretty similar quarterbacks. Like, we're going to save that money, spend it elsewhere, and really keep fighting for Super Bowls in the short term. But I don't know. They're going to have some interesting decisions to make. And, you know, it's better to be on that side of things when there's like too many good players and not enough money than to be on the side of like, we're paying just shitty players because we have so much money.
Yeah, I would agree. or you're in the situation
it's a
of
good
like,
problem to have.
Well, like the Minnesota Wild, you're like, well, we locked up so many people and they're not very good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the worst position to be in.
That might be the worst.
Well, it's another thing to be like, we have terrible players, but they're all young and we know we're terrible and we're going to be good in 3 years, but we have tons of cap space versus we have a bunch of average players who aren't very good and we have no cap space and we don't want to be in that sort of purgatory, which we're not really in right now. And I think having a serviceable quarterback like Keenum allows us to be in that position.
Yeah. All right. So, Vikings, big games here, two road games. They're at Atlanta next week. They're at Carolina the week after. I think we match up pretty well with these teams. I mean, honestly, at this point, I feel pretty confident playing anyone. I'm not saying we're going to win every game. But if we could go 4-1, I think we'll have a reasonable chance at getting the one seed and as a 13-3 team. I think 12-4 probably gets you a bye in the two seed. And that would mean just going 3-2 the rest of the way. And I think 5-0 locks up the one seed with ease. So, you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting down the stretch. And I need to take my own advice and enjoy it, because it's just not every year that your team is one of the best teams in the league.
I think we, at the beginning of the season, if anyone would have said at week 12, you're going to be 9-2.
You're going to be 9-2, and Case Keenum's going to be 7-2 as a starter.
And Dalvin Cook got hurt week 5.
Yeah.
Or whatever was it.
And Teddy hasn't thrown a pass, and Bradford played like less than a game and a half.
Yeah. And you'd be like, wait, so we're 9-2 and all that happened? I think
you just said, wait, you mean 2-9, right?
Yeah. I don't think anyone, especially after Bradford got hurt, Keenum got thrown in. I mean, you know, the Packers are playing Pittsburgh right now. After that Pittsburgh game, with Keenum as a starter, I think everyone thought, oh my God, let's just tank the rest of the season. You know what I mean?
I mean, realistically,
after that performance.
I told everyone that the season was over when Dalvin Cook got hurt. I was like, well, season's done. I didn't even enjoy the rest of the game. I didn't even care if the Lions beat us. I was so upset.
Yeah, and it did look a little dicey. And since then, everything's been pretty efficient, pretty effective. We've won games that we were probably underdogs in. Listen, like you said, enjoy it. Let's not get our hopes too high. We have a tough two games coming up. Even if we lose both, we're still in the driver's seat for the NFC North. We still have a really good chance to lock up a first-round bye. The only problem is there's kind of a logjam at the top of the NFC. And Philadelphia right now is the clear favorite. They're dominating everybody by large margins. Carson Wentz looks like MVP.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even be upset or shocked.
It's him or Brady.
And
Brady's wanted a bunch. So
then you've got New Orleans, Carolina, Atlanta, Seattle.
Detroit.
All these teams are pretty good. So we're going to keep taking care of business. I love being the underdog. I love being unappreciated. I love being, you know, everyone's kind of against us, no respect. I think that's where Zimmer thrives. I think that's where this defense thrives. Let's do it. Let's just keep going.
All right, let's move on to a team that I think was drinking the Kool-Aid a little too much. We talked pretty negatively about them last week, so we'll try to go easy on them. But the Minnesota Timberwolves, still kind of struggling, not looking like the team we expected. Did get a win tonight, a revenge game at home against the Phoenix Suns to go to 12-8. What do you think's been going on the last week? Where do you see the team? Is there signs for hope? Today you did have Karl-Anthony Towns with 32, Jimmy Butler with 25, and Wiggins with 21. Probably one of their only games of the year where all three of them were over 20 points. And
we won. That's weird that all three of them had success offensively and we dominated. I don't know. Everything's kind of trending in the wrong direction for them. We're getting shit on by teams in the Eastern Conference, which is sad and disgusting, and that shouldn't be happening. I'm not saying the East is bad, but we're absolutely getting demolished by something. I mean, what did Miami have? 19 made threes against? I mean, I thought Tibbs was like this defensive guru, and they're just raining threes on us like they're the Golden State Warriors and they're the Miami freaking Heat.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they don't have good players, but good God, you can't close out anybody like that. I mean, the Pacers did the same thing. And the Pistons had done the same
Pistons
thing.
The Pistons have our number.
They've absolutely demolished us from the three-point line. Yeah. And they don't even have good three-point shooters.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, these teams are irrationally confident from the outside against us. And it's frustrating to watch because you can see Tibbs is frustrated. I feel like his defensive scheme has been passed by the NBA. Yeah. And he's not adjusting his scheme to the team that he has. He's trying to adjust the team to the scheme.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really work. I definitely feel like that does not work in professional sports more than anything. I think in high school, you may be able to make that work a little bit more successfully if you have athletes. But in the NBA, that's just not going to work. And
what seed does Tibbs need to get this year to keep his job?
I mean, any seed. I think if he makes the playoffs, he keeps his job.
You think he keeps his job if they're an 8 seed and they get swept?
Yes, because that's a far cry from last season even.
Okay.
But then I think he's on a very short leash. And let's say we get the 8 seed and we get swept, which is not that uncommon, right? I mean,
no,
you're going to get...
It's not.
So, I mean, if we're playing the Golden State Warriors and we lose, let's just say 3-1 or whatever in the first round, is it a...
It's 4 now. It's specific.
Okay, so let's say we lose 4-1. That's not that surprising.
No.
But then I think if we come out of the gate like 5-10 the next season, he's fired.
Yeah.
And we're looking for a new coach. So I think it's playoffs or bust. I mean, you're saying, you know, 5 seed. We do not look like a 5 seed team right now.
No.
I would say barely a 7 seed at best.
The thing we have going for us is like a lot of people thought the Clippers were going to be good, and they're like one of the worst teams in the league.
I think the West is kind of weak right now.
Yeah, the West is not.
It's still early enough to say we don't really know, but it's also kind of getting to that point in the season where you're kind of starting to understand who the good teams are. And I don't think the Wolves really qualify at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good teams in the East. Obviously, Boston's probably the best team in the league right now. The Pistons have been really good. Cleveland is kind of back. I mean, they've won 7 in a row now. Toronto is...
They don't care until April anyway.
Yeah, Toronto's kind of the same team. The Sixers are refreshing. Pacers are okay. And then it gets kind of into a log jam. In the West, obviously, the Rockets have been fantastic. The Warriors are the best team in the league, even though they've lost a few games. San Antonio's right there. The Wolves are still in fourth, tied with Portland at 12-8.
But we're trending in the wrong direction.
We are. We're 5-5 over our last 10. Denver is right behind us. The Pelicans are right behind us. And then the 8 seed, the Utah Jazz, has a losing record. The Lakers are behind them. Oklahoma City, the Clippers, the Grizzlies. Some of those teams that I think people really thought were going to be playoff teams, like OKC, the Clippers, and the Grizzlies, they all might still end up there. But really, really off to difficult starts.
Yeah. It's a weird year.
It is.
And I think the West is, they're down at this point. I think it's a little top heavy. And I wouldn't even consider the Wolves in the top of the West. I know you said they're what, fifth, fourth?
They're fourth, yeah.
I mean, they're not a top four team in the West.
I don't know. Maybe the West and the East are a little more even for the first time in some time, which would be nice.
It had to come back to the center a little bit, right? I mean, it had to come back to the mean. But I think, you know, Oklahoma City could be scary if they figure things out. I'm not saying, you know, Carmelo Anthony and Paul George are game changers, but maybe they figure it out. And they get really good.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the Lakers sort of put together a decent run. I mean, they've got a decent set of young players. Takes a little time to get into things. I don't know. I would say that the Wolves are a 7 seed at best at this point in time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be fun to watch. Last thing we need to talk about today is, real quickly, we need to run through what's happening in one of the most exciting leagues on earth, the Premier League.
Oh, yeah.
Where your team and Jim's team would love to have him here to talk and defend his team. He was wearing his jersey. He was all excited. They took the early lead when former Chelsea player Mohamed Salah took a chance right in front, finished it, didn't celebrate, which had Jim all weirded out.
Yeah, he didn't understand that. But actually, so a lot of times you don't celebrate when you score against your former club. But I heard via an interview with Salah that he didn't celebrate because of all of the violence that
happened in Egypt.
And it was more of a shout out to his home country that there are bigger things going on than a soccer match.
Okay.
Which I very much respect that.
No, I respect that. I think it would have been cooler than if he would have like ripped off his Liverpool jersey and had his Egypt jersey on underneath it. That'd have been kind of cool.
That would have been a hefty fine.
Yeah, it would have been worth it.
No.
He's a wealthy man.
Yeah.
But yeah, then your team came back with what some may say a lucky goal.
The perfect goal.
But the perfect
intentional goal.
I thought it was a top left. Yeah. They brought on a super sub, Willian, who constantly is being rumored to leave, but literally does good things every time he sees the field.
Yeah. And making excuses for my club. We were in Azerbaijan on Wednesday for a Champions League match that it wasn't must win because we were probably going to win anyway, but it was must win to advance to the round of 16, to the knockout stage. So we're not necessarily going to win the group, but we're definitely going to, you know, advance. So it was we're going to play most of the good guys to make sure that we just secure this early and then we can kind of coast. So we played that on Wednesday and then had to come back, travel to Anfield, play on Saturday. So a little tough to go on the road 3,000 something miles traveling across Europe and, you know, part of, I don't know if it's Russian territory or Asian territory, wherever it is. So we did look a little sluggish at first. Liverpool definitely had their foot on the gas. And then like the last 20 minutes of the match were just insane. It was back and forth. Nobody was playing any defense. It was just see who could counter the quickest and get the best chance. Chelsea had a lot of chances to actually score a second goal, as did Liverpool. They had a lot of chances too. A couple of them went wide. Nice save by Courtois. Overall, great match. We didn't drop points. We got, you know, winning at Liverpool is never easy. So to take a draw out of that, that's fine. I wish we would have won. We would have taken a little step closer to United, but you know, that's fine. That's how they fall.
Yeah, Chelsea or City, the runaway favorites, had a difficult affair against Huddersfield. They actually were losing. They got a penalty and a late goal to win. United had a tough time with, who did they even play? I don't know, some junkie team. And they got an own goal to win. And then my team, the Arsenal, had a questionable penalty call in the 92nd minute.
Pretty garbage. Which
pushed them to victory. And so some of these teams really struggling with lesser teams. And I think that's the beauty of the Premier League. Tottenham Hotspur, the greatest team on earth, supposedly, drew, and we're probably lucky to draw, with West Brom. And, I mean, that's what's so great about the Premier League. You know, these teams are so wealthy, so many good teams, and they constantly drop points to these tiny lesser clubs who are just fighting to stay in the league.
Yeah, and, you know, your club playing at, I forget the name of the stadium.
Turf Moor.
Yeah. They always play well there.
It was tough.
It's a tough road, and they make it impossible. And for whatever reason, their record at home against even top flight clubs is really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, you guys got the penalty late, and that helps. You know, sometimes things have to break your way. Whether it's a referee, you hate for the referee to decide the match, but you know, sometimes you feel like your team deserves to win, and you know, those bounces have to go your way. I will say Eric sold his Arsenal stock after the third match of the season, fourth match of the season.
Well, if your now, goal is to win the league, then I've sold my stock and I'm happy. I'd sell it again.
But you sold it high, and now you sold it really low, and now you want to buy high again. So you're a horrible investor in Premier League stock. But overall, I think the clubs, I mean, we want to see Arsenal in the top flight. We want to see United. We want to see City. We want to see Liverpool. And all the teams are up there. Everyone's playing pretty well. And there's only room for four. Who's it going to be? We'll say City's going to win the league.
City's going to win.
I don't think that's going to be.
United's going to be in the top four. And then it's going to be two of Chelsea, Spurs, and Arsenal. And I think I'm going to go with Chelsea and Spurs just because I think Arsenal's going to sell a couple guys in January.
Gonna miss Sanchez.
But I don't know. It'll be fun. It's always exciting, Premier League. If you aren't watching it yet, you need to give it a try. I know we've been trying to sell you guys on it for 2 years, but it is a lot of fun. Pick a team. Listen to our past battles and arguments about who you should be cheering for. And wake up early on the weekends and go to the pub and have yourself a real early beer and enjoy a new sport.
Like, we went to the local downtown to watch Arsenal Spurs last Saturday. And it was not this past Saturday, but the previous Saturday. And I think we already talked about this, but it was incredible. We didn't even have a beer. We had a breakfast sandwich and coffee.
Yeah.
And it was lively. Excuse me. People were into it. Everyone was having a great time. We all love watching the Spurs lose.
Yep.
Made our way over to Brits, had one beer. It was phenomenal. And it doesn't even have to be this insane, like, oh my God, you got to drink 32 Guinness before noon. Everyone is in a good mood. Yep. Everyone loves watching this. You get to watch 45 minutes of play, 20 minute break, and then 45 more minutes. And you're over and done in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Same thing from your couch. You can do it. It's the best league to watch on television.
For sure it is.
It may not be the most, like, there's not going to be 6 goals to 5 goals or whatever, but it's the most beautiful sport to watch, and it's the most fun to watch.
All right, guys, that's all the time we have this week on the Nordies podcast. Make sure to send your regards and your best wishes to Jim as he gets over a horrible case of poison ivy.
Yep.
And, some
calamine lotion and crutches. That's what he's going to need.
Yeah. I mean, it's all over his face and his chest and everywhere. And we just feel for you, buddy. So get better. Don't itch. Wear some oven mitts to bed or whatever you need to do. And heal up, and you'll be back before you know it. So Thanks for listening to the Northeast Podcast. We'll be back with you guys next week. Take it easy.